crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Radio Show on this sunny December 13th, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. A lot has happened in the last couple of days. We've had the climate agreement reached in Paris. All the nations there have signed it. 190-some-odd nations have signed this agreement. We're going to break that down for you. What does it mean? What is it going to cost you? It's going to cost you the Earth, basically. It's an astronomical. It's not just a planetary tax. This is going to be astronomical. But the good news is that they did not set up an enforcement mechanism as Obama wanted to have. So lacking an enforcement mechanism and lacking trying to dance around this and call it not a treaty when it really is a treaty, there's a lot we can do to stop this. But the key thing that we have to work against is the public perception. Now, a lot of people in America aren't buying this, but worldwide, they have created a massive panic on bad data. And we need to talk about what's going to happen with that. But we have an amazing confession from John Kerry that came out during the Paris Accords. You will not believe what he had to say. Now, we also have the French elections took place today. Why, you say, would we cover the French elections? Well, because they're a referendum on the open borders of Europe and one of the places where we've seen the worst kind of Islamification in Europe. But it looks like they're going to go straight ahead to full out Eurabia. We've had a coalition of socialists basically took themselves off of the ballot in the second round of voting. They have a two-step process. First, they have a multi-party democracy, unlike we have in the United States, where we have only two parties really allowed to participate in the process. There they have multi-parties. And so what they do is they have a two-step voting process. The lower results are taken off, and they have a second ballot. And that second ballot, the socialists who came in third removed themselves from the ballot completely, removed their candidates and said, go vote for our hated opponents, the conservative Republicans. That's what they call themselves, Sarkozy's party there, just so we can stop the National Front, Marine Le Pen and her, I think it's niece or something like that, that related in the family. Nevertheless, they had won in the first round. They'd won 6 out of 13 areas. They'd come in first place. So we're going to talk about that, the implications of that. Of course, the Washington Post is attacking Donald Trump by hitting him with Alex Jones and InfoWars. Thanks to Trump, the fringe news enters the mainstream media. So we're going to talk to you about that ad hominem attack, the canards that the Washington Post uses, and the double standard that they use. They don't criticize CNN, who's going to be the host of the debates this Tuesday. They don't criticize them for some of the reporting that they've done. They don't take it as an endorsement MSNBC when Trump goes on and talks to some of these networks, or take it as an endorsement of CNN. You know, we've got Megyn Kelly, who told us in all seriousness with a lot of anger a year or two ago that Santa Claus is white. So, you know, it's we could find things to complain about with every outlet. But of course, what they don't like is the fact that InfoWars is rising, that InfoWars has credibility simply because we cover all the news and we look at it and we analyze it. We don't pretend that we have an objectivity that is disinterested in anything, that we're completely objective. No, we have a point of view, but we also have facts. We argue those facts from that point of view. We analyze the news for you. We debate the issues here for you, and we're upfront about our biases. We don't pretend that we don't have any biases, unlike Fox News or CNN or these other people who clearly do have biases. That's why they're losing their audience, because people aren't buying that. So either they're not aware of their biases or they're lying to you about it. But we're gaining ground here. We've got the Washington Post tackling us on that. And of course, we have some new information on the terror front. We have a terrorist attack that was foiled in Switzerland by a couple of people holding Syrian passports coming in from France. Nevertheless, the Democrats are trying to come after guns. Now, these people were not using guns. They were using chemicals. Looked like it was going to be a chemical attack. What are you going to do about that? Are we going to have chemical controls? We'll be right back.
crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
It's Sunday, December 13th, 2015. This is the Alex Jones Radio Show. I'm David Knight, your host. Yesterday, they passed a climate agreement in Paris. We're going to talk about that, break that down. That's going to be the first thing up on our news, but we have a lot of different subjects to cover just to give you an overview of what we're going to be talking about. Of course, the Washington Post has now attacked Donald Trump for actually giving an interview to somebody that's outside the Beltway establishment. You know, he actually came here and talked to Alex Jones on InfoWars. Shame on him. He shouldn't do that. You know, that's we're giving the fringe news entering the mainstream. No, the reason we're entering the mainstream is because we are analyzing the news in a way that the mainstream media will not do. And we're clear about our biases. They pretend that they're not biased, but we're clear about it. So we're going to talk about that as well. There's also French elections. We've just seen the results of the French elections. They're important because they are a referendum on the Islamification of Europe. We just saw another terror attack, perhaps foiled, in Switzerland. It looked like there was going to be a chemical attack or some kind of an explosive attack aimed at Geneva, Switzerland. It was intercepted by the Swiss police. They were a couple of Syrian individuals. At first, they were looking for five people. They've now arrested two. They found traces of explosives in the vehicle that they had and chemicals. So that is something that people should consider when they listen to the Democrats talking about how we now have to take guns away from law-abiding Americans because, you know, they might be used in a terror attack. Yes, guns were used in the terror attack in San Bernardino, depending on, we're not going to go into the details of that and the questions that many people have raised about that attack and which parts of it are authentic and which parts aren't. We know that the government is tracking everybody. Of course, we were called paranoid when we said the government was tracking everyone for a very long time. It's no question anymore. Ed Snowden revealed that to everybody. The government proudly boasts of it. And yet, even though they're tracking people, they can't spot these jihadis, they tell us, that pulled off this attack in San Bernardino. And they can't spot them in advance and do anything about it. But you need more surveillance, even though they knew it. That's the cognitive dissonance that they're selling you. And now, even though we have open borders, and of course we cannot close our borders, we can't keep the terrorists out, we have to take guns away from people inside of America, legitimate owners of guns. And of course the people who are going to conduct terror attacks, they are not going to go through and check off all the laws and go through the waiting periods and the background checks to get their guns any more than they will to get explosive devices or chemical weapons or biological weapons or nuclear weapons. You understand that, right? And so we're going to also play a little bit of the clip that we had of Kurt Russell talking to an interviewer about the upcoming Quentin Tarantino film, Hateful Eight. The guy kept talking to him about how awful it was that movies would show guns in this day and age. And Kurt Russell kept explaining to him, hey, dude, this is about art. This is like a painting or something. It's not reality. You need to understand the difference in reality. But he just kept coming at him. So in a couple of spots, Kurt Russell actually talked about the reality of gun control and why you want to have the population armed. So we've got a lot to talk about, but let's talk about the climate accord first. And before I do, let me preface it with this article that came out the middle of last week, where the Vatican has now got a document that they put out saying the Jews don't need Christ to be saved. Yes, the Jews can secure eternal salvation, says the Vatican, without converting to Christianity. The report unequivocally states that the church should not actively seek to convert Jews to Christianity. No, what you need to do is you need to convert them to climate socialists, because that's what we're hearing this entire weekend. We have saved the world. We're on the path to save the world. We were at the brink. We were all about to burst into flames, but we have now pulled this back by applying this religion of climatology. And you know what it's going to require? It's going to require massive indulgences paid to the crony climatists. That's what it's going to involve. It's going to be trillions upon trillions of dollars paid to people like Al Gore and Bill Gates. And they have the biggest grins on their faces. They cannot wipe those grins out. Here's the good news, though. When we look at this agreement, there were a couple of different options that they had. And quite frankly, I thought they were going to go for the full-on option of having a an international climate court that was going to review it. It's actually called the International Climate Justice Tribunal that would be run by the United Nations. And, of course, Obama was pushing very hard. He said, we need to have teeth in this. We need to have an enforcement mechanism. We need to have penalties. And so question is, if you've got penalties, you're going to have some kind of globalist governance that is going to assess those penalties and that is going to take the money for those penalties, a kind of global police. And they're still talking about that. Understand, that is still on the table, but it's not in this agreement. So that's very good that Obama failed to get that enforcement mechanism. And as they point out, when CNN looks at it, and a lot of these activists who were going around Paris wearing polar bear suits, I saw picture after picture after picture of people in polar bear suits holding up homeless signs. Another group of people in polar bear suits, and the Guardian had the caption underneath all these people wandering around in polar bear suits. Experts explain climate change, and I was like, okay, yeah, that looks like the experts. As far as I'm concerned, they're a bunch of clowns dressed in polar bear suits. But anyway, they point out in CNN, they say this is short on specifics, such as how the plan will be enforced or how improvements will be measured. They've come up with some concrete goals. But if you look at the agreement, at the very bottom of it, it says that countries can withdraw from this agreement in 3 years. And of course, it is not binding if it's not a treaty. And the Obama administration is pretending that it is not a treaty because they know they're not going to get this thing through the Senate. So it's kind of interesting how this is working out. But of course, now Bernie Sanders is not impressed by this at all. He's one of the people who is wringing his hands. He's not happy with what's going on because, you know, Bernie Sanders has the only true solution to this. Destroy our economy with socialism. If you destroy the economy with socialism, you know, kind of Mao's cultural revolution, everything will be just fine. We can all go back to hoeing things by hand with wooden plows. And, of course, you won't be able to have livestock because livestock farting is just that's going to destroy the earth as well, according to them. You know, consider the fact of that they said that livestock, the things that we eat, okay, 14.5% of their unicorn gases are created by that, equivalent to the amount of unicorn gases that come out of all of the automobiles, all the planes, all the ships, all the transportation. So you add those two up, that's about 29%. And Bernie Sanders wants us to get down 40% reduction. So we got to get rid of all of our animals. We got to get rid of all of our transportation. And then we got to still do something. Going to still have to do something. And so I guess what we could do is we could reduce the population. That's where these people always go, isn't it? See, you're the problem because you breathe out carbon dioxide. And of course, they can't admit that God created a resilient world system here, a closed loop system, where as we breathe out carbon dioxide, it makes the plants grow faster. They absorb that. They emit oxygen. It's a resilient system. Yes, we can damage it, but it is very resilient by design. But look at this admission by John Kerry. This is very interesting. This is from WND, and they point out again, the best thing about this is that there is no creation of an international climate justice tribunal. This is what these people are calling for. That was what they had spelled out in detail. They had two options. One of them was, well, we're going to set up some goals and we're going to try to voluntarily abide by these goals. But then the other one, and they said, yeah, we're not really sure how many people we'll have to monitor that or exactly how that's going to work. But they had a very detailed plan for the International Climate Justice Tribunal. They knew exactly where the members were going to come from. They knew how many there were going to be. There were going to be 12. And so it's good that that didn't make it through this. But here's what John Kerry said, in case you think that I'm taking this not seriously enough for Bernie Sandernista. John Kerry said, the fact is that even if every single American citizen biked to work, carpooled to school, used only solar panels to power their homes, if we planted a dozen trees, if we somehow eliminated all our domestic greenhouse gas emissions, guess what? That still wouldn't be enough to offset the carbon pollution from the rest of the world. We'll read you the rest of that quote when we come back. Stay with us.
It's always a tough vote because the average person thinks raising the debt ceiling must mean that we're running up our debt. Raising the debt ceiling, which has been done over 100 times, does not increase our debt. It does not somehow promote profligacy. All it does is it says, you got to pay the bills that you've already racked up, Congress.
Just got paid today. Got me a pocket full of change.
You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Said I just got paid today.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we've been talking about the new climate agreement, what it means for us, and we have an amazing statement by John Kerry, Secretary of State, what he said at the addressing the conference there in Paris. And I want to get back to that, but I want to clarify something, too. And that is, you know, I'm all for solar energy on a personal basis. I mean, I'm looking at it for my own personal basis as a means of emergency backup, as a means of getting off of the grid, because that is a dependency that I don't want to have. It's also a means of control. So I want to separate myself from that grid. Where it doesn't work, however, is when they try to use solar power on the grid. And that's what we've seen over and over again, where we've seen the massive crony capitalism involved in the Obama administration. Remember Solyndra? Well, there was a Spanish company that just went belly up as this climate conference was starting. I think the name of it was Abengoa, something like that. $3 billion, however, the U.S. taxpayers are kind of probably lose just on that one deal. And this was what they were doing was creating these massive solar power stations out in the desert to supplement the grid. And that's a problem because unlike when you're doing it on your at your home, when you're doing it on the grid, you have to have some kind of a backup capability. You have to be able to store that energy during the day, or you have to have a fossil fuel power generating plant, something that is going to be reliable to make up for the days when you have low output or where you're at the times when the sun is not shining at night. So there are issues that are there with the grid. There's one of the things I'm looking at, and I'm glad to see that InfoWars started carrying this. One of the things I've been looking for is to start out just an emergency backup supply. The InfoWars solar base station power supply. We've just introduced this. It's something they looked long and hard to find the best, most affordable, high-powered solar generator they could find. This uses a new battery technology, the most recent battery technology, and that's really the weak link at this point. The solar cells have been coming down in price quite a bit, but it's the batteries that have been the weak link in this. This is a lithium iron phosphate battery. It'll last up to 8 times longer than a typical unit, and these are 1,500 watts of continuous power, 3,000 watts peak for use in an emergency. And depending on how you use it, if you set this up in a permanent way in your dwelling, you can get a federal tax credit for the next year when you buy these things, 30% tax credit, depending on how you set it up. Of course, you'll have to look at the rules and see if that applies to your particular application. But again, it's one way I'm looking at this. I want to get, while it's still there, I want to get my federal tax credit to add solar to my home and actually help have the federal government help to get me off of the grid. I mean, what could be better than that using their stuff against them? So anyway, take a look at that. It's at InfoWarsStore.com. It's the InfoWars Solar Base Station. Now, getting back to what John Kerry said, I thought it was absolutely amazing, and I only had time to read half of it. He said, if every single American biked to work, they carpooled to school, they only used solar powers to do their home, they planted trees, so forth and so on, it still wouldn't be enough to offset the carbon pollution from the rest of the world. And then he went on, he continued, he said, if all the industrialized nations went down to zero emissions. Remember, he said, I say zero emissions, he stressed it himself, it wouldn't be enough. Not when more than 65% of the world's carbon pollution comes from the developing world. And so that's the issue that they're looking at there. What they're trying to decide at an international level is whose economies are going to be allowed to grow and whose economies are going to be forced to shrink. And guess who's going to be forced to shrink? We will. China will be allowed to grow. We've already seen that agreement with Obama and China earlier this year, saying that we're not going to slow down their rate of growth until long after we have capped and decreased our rate of growth here. So we know that these other countries are going to be allowed to continue to grow, but it's even worse than that, folks. They're going to make us subsidize massive green energy projects in the developing world. So we're going to have to pay for that. And who's going to make the money out of that? It's going to be the same kind of crony capitalism that we just saw fail with the Spanish corporation that American taxpayers are on the hook for. Now, in this article from WND, they talked to Chris Horner. I've interviewed Chris Horner in the past. He's a very interesting guy. He's an author of a lot of different books on climate change. I worked with him to try to uncover the data that the climate people don't want you to see. Back in Virginia, of course, we had Michael Mann, who had been doing work for the University of Virginia. He'd been collecting information, and they'd been producing climate models that were the basis of public policy, and yet they would not show you the emails or the original data. This is all part of, he was caught up quite a bit. He's probably the American scientist that was caught up more in the climate gate coming out of the UK than any other America, and he had a lot of emails that he was going back and forth. And of course, they were saying things like, we need to hide the decline. It's not matching what our models are. And so we said, well, let's see what your original data is. And so they fought very hard against that. They fought against the Attorney General in Virginia. They fought against, fought it every step of the way through court, saying these are private emails. You're not going to be allowed to see them. It's like, well, okay, fine. But you were doing this while you were on company time, while you were being paid by the taxpayers working at this public institution doing research, being paid by the public to do this research, and the results of your research are being used for public policy. And they said, oh, yeah, but it's copyrighted stuff. And it's like, no, you've already published your findings. We just want to see what it was based on. So it went round and round, and Chris Horner was adjudicating that. He's also argued before the Supreme Court, author of Red Hot Lies. And of course, he was labeled a climate criminal along with Mark Morano of Climate Depot. Remember, Alex Jones interviewed him last week. He had a film that previewed in Paris talking about scientists, interviewing scientists who had changed their position. I think it's interesting. I haven't seen his documentary. I'm very anxious to see it. But I know, for example, that the guy that came up with the Gaia theory, I think his name is Lovelock, if I'm not mistaken, British scientist. I remember when we were in the UK in 2001, there were just articles all over the place about the Gaia theory. And I took we took our kids to the London Museum, Children's Museum, and up on the third or fourth floor where they had a play area, they had this continuous loop putting out Gaia theory, which essentially said the Earth is a living organism. Yes, there's a lot of resilience, and you could look at it as a living organism. But then saying that humans, yeah, Americans primarily, but humans in general, were a virus and we needed to be eliminated. That's the essence of the Gaia theory. It's a kind of a paganism, and that's what the Pope has embraced a great deal of as well, in trying to make this moral case for climate change. But anyway, it's interesting to see that scientist who came up with the Gaia theory and was one of the people who was pushing a climate change and man-made global warming, he now rejects global warming. So they're attacking people, talking about them being criminals. Those are the tools of the left. When we talk about PC, political correctness, we need to understand that it is really about propaganda and censorship, trying to criminalize speech of people that you don't agree with. That has no place in science. And when people are telling you that, they're not scientific authorities. We'll be right back.
Another world. Another time. In the age of wonder. Another world. Another time. His life was green and good until the crystal cracked.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to be talking about a variety of issues, and I've got some other subjects I want to talk about. We've been talking about the climate agreement that was agreed to yesterday and announced yesterday, and I've got a couple of more things I want to say about that. I want to talk about their political tactics. I just touched on it at the end of the last segment. I also want to talk about their scientific methods, and I want to talk about where this is headed, a new space race with satellites looking at your energy usage and assessing fines. That's where this is really headed. We've also got some other things we're going to be talking about. As soon as we finish that, we're going to be talking about the elections in France because, of course, it was something of a referendum on the Islamification of Europe. as well as the Swiss terror plot that was just uncovered. And, of course, the Washington Post is attacking Donald Trump by using InfoWars against him. So we'll talk about that and the developments in politics, because we're going to be covering the debate this Tuesday. We'll be doing that live on the InfoWars Nightly News with our news crew. So tune in and watch that. We'll tell you a little bit more about that later. But let's go back to the climate situation. Let's talk about their tactics here, because there was a story that came out in the Daily Mail, a UK paper, this last week. A guy there named Quentin Letts, How I Was Vaporized by the BBC's Green Gestapo. This was something that the Drudge Report linked to for several days. I don't know, it may even still be up on the Drudge Report, but it was up for several days because this really is instructive on how these people roll. This is how they have gotten a lot of people in the public concerned and frightened out of their mind about something that I believe is not an issue whatsoever. But listen to their tactics. He said, earlier this year, this is a comedian, earlier this year, I made a jaunty little Radio 4 program, this is the BBC, called What's the Point of the Met Office? Last week, after a bizarre and focused lobbying campaign from environmental activists, the program was removed from the BBC's iPlayer playback facility. To adapt Orwell, his program became an unprogram, he said. One moment it was there, available to license fee payers to hear at their convenience. The next, kerwhack, it disappeared, as surely as one of those Islamist-owned oil derricks in Syria, snotted by an RAF Paveway missile. Ladies and gentlemen, the left had struck. I had been censored, expunged, deleted, dealt with, as the RAF types put it. He says it was fueled by a mad BBC bureaucracy that has demonstrated the sort of foot-stamping insistence on orthodoxy. That is perfect. Foot-stamping insistence on orthodoxy. How many times have we seen that? Arrest these people. They dissent. They don't think that the earth is the center of the universe. Arrest them. Okay. Not seen in peacetime, he says, since Oliver Cromwell's Commonwealth in the 17th century. Yeah, it has a lot of historical precedents, and nothing ever comes out of this that's good. And, of course, we've already seen Jeremy Clarkson, Top Gear crew, one of my all-time favorite programs. We've seen them driven off by the foot-stomping orthodoxy of the BBC. They continued to tweak the BBC on all their political correctness, and they were eventually, they found something they could get rid of them for. And, of course, they're laughing all the way to the bank going through Amazon. These guys became richer than they could ever have imagined, and I can't wait to see their new program. Now, going back to climate change here, the activists in Paris are denouncing the deal as weak. Yeah, it doesn't have any enforcement mechanism, but that's coming. You hang on to that. They're going to make that dream come true. They're not going to give up. And we're going to talk about that enforcement mechanism. But let's talk about, first of all, their goal. 2 degrees Celsius. They don't want to see global warming change by more than 2 degrees Celsius. So it's about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, now, as Alex talked to the founder of the Weather Channel last week, meteorologists and anybody who really has been involved in actually measuring stuff in the real world knows that there are tolerances and limits on this. This is what I said when I want to talk about their scientific method. When I was in engineering and we would go through and we would run our models and you know, we typically would take things out to 3 digits of significance. And I remember saying to one of the professors one time, is that enough? Don't we need more than that? And he goes, you're crazy, because you're not even going to get that in the real world. You're not even going to get 3 digits of significance. And what the founder of the Weather Channel said, he said when he was a young guy and they had mercury thermometers and everything, you didn't have that kind of accuracy to say that we're going to limit this to 1.5 degrees centigrade or 2 degrees centigrade or the earth is going to melt. You don't have that kind of data. I know from experience that as we would look at our temperature in our cars, we would drive from the little town of Raleigh to the even smaller town where we lived outside of Raleigh, most heavily covered by trees. We would always see the temperature drop 3 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit. We would see that all the time, just in the drive from Raleigh to the exurbs. I see it here in Texas. I still see that kind of temperature drop from where I live and where I work. The reality is that in cities, you have heat islands. The temperature is higher there. So it's very dependent on where you put your thermometer. A lot of these places where they're collecting the temperatures are on airport tarmacs. Guess what? you're going to get a much higher reading there than you're going to get if you put it on a tree in the forest. It's very dependent on where you measure the information. And they want to say that they want to limit this to 1.5 degrees Celsius with a baseline going back to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. They don't have the data for that to start with. They don't have global temperatures for what was happening at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. They can infer those temperatures from ice cores and other things, but of course, then there's a lot of there's a lot of modeling, a lot of assumptions involved in that. It's not a hardcore measurement that they're doing there. Okay, so keep that in mind. These people are basically giving you something that you can't really accurately measure, and they're using that as a basis to re-alter the world's economy, to set up world governance, to set up the biggest scam of multinational corporations working with government people like Al Gore is part of. That's the biggest scam the world has ever seen. That's what this is truly about. It is junk science, if I've ever seen junk science. Now, where is this headed? This is headed to a very authoritarian regime. Look at this article. This is this is from Reuters. A new space race, satellites could test the world's climate vows. This is how they're going to verify it, okay? And this may be why they didn't come up at this point in time with any hardcore mechanism, international mechanism to assess fines, to measure all of this, because they didn't have a way that they could bluff that on you, okay? Scientists from the United States, Japan, and China are racing to perfect satellite technology that could one day measure greenhouse gas emissions from space, potentially transforming the winner of these contracts, lots of bucks, okay, into the world's first climate cop. So not only is there a lot of money involved in whoever gets this contract, but then they're going to be the climate cops, the climate police. That implies a world government, doesn't it? These cops are going to work, these climate global cops are going to work for a global governance. And then they say they're going to monitor a single country's net emissions from above. It will not only become an important tool to establish whether it's met its promises to slow global warming, a point of contention at the climate talks in Paris, but it will also help emitters to pinpoint the sources of greenhouse gases more quickly and cheaply. Guess what? They're going to take that right down to your single house. They'll have the technology to do that if we don't stop them. We have to understand the principle involved in this. We understand where it's going. This is about global governance. It's about crony capitalism. And it's about monitoring and controlling everything you do. I find it interesting that they don't want to accept the satellite measurements of temperature. They don't want to accept the NASA satellite measurements showing that the polar ice caps have increased to record levels. But they will accept it if they can use it to charge you a fee. And that day is coming. And they are working very hard to see who's going to get the big bucks. It's just like the military-industrial complex, folks. They're going to go to war with you over your energy use. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about the Islamification of Europe.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation, it's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to talk about the election that happened in France today. We just got the returns just before we went on air. We're going to tell you about that and talk about the Islamification of Europe, because that's what this essentially was a referendum on. Before we do, I want to let you know about the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have an Essentials Pack, 33% off retail if you buy Survival Shield X2, Super Male and Female Vitality, and Silver Bullet. You get that 33% off retail. We have a Cleanse Pack, Deep Cleanse, Living Defense, and Oxy Powder, 28% off retail. Winter Sun, Vitamin D3, 15% off. That's a sale that's going on. And everything at the InfoWars store is available right now with free shipping. That's a huge saving. So take a look at the specials that are there. That's not all the specials. We've got a coffee special. We've got another special just on Deep Cleanse by itself, 17% off. And, of course, we have some new products, the solar base station power supply, as well as a premium power pack that you can use to even start your car. It's got all kinds of connections to it. You can use it for your bug out bag, keep your devices running, as well as even jump start your car. That's how much power it's got in it. So take a look at those. Free shipping right now for Christmas. And we have amazing specials on a wide variety of products. That's at InfoWarsStore.com. Now, today they had a second round of elections in France. The first round was won 6 out of 13 by the National Front, which is a populist party, had been very controversial. They had been accused of fascism. Of course, they will always accuse anybody that talks about nationalism. They will always talk about them as being xenophobic. Haven't looked at, quite honestly, the National Front Party to make a decision on it. But what it has become is a referendum on whether or not they're going to have open borders. France, more than anywhere else, we've seen multiple terror attacks there, and we've seen a more open immigration policy in that country than any of the other European countries, except perhaps maybe Germany. And so there was a huge pushback against that type of policy. The people are not happy with what's going on. They're not happy with being flooded by people that they're told are refugees. And of course, nobody wants to talk about how they became refugees. They became refugees because of wars that we fomented, that we equipped. Nobody wants to talk about that, especially not in American politics. But we're told that they're refugees when, in fact, most of the people who are coming in are young men in their early 20s to mid-30s. And we cannot vet where these people are coming from. We don't know if they're Syrians or if they've got forged passports. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Let's first talk about what happened. Now, they had a first round of elections last week. 6 out of the 13 regions were won by the National Front Party. It was a huge sea change in the electorate there because of the pushback against this open immigration policy. That was the basis for their popularity. They got 28% of the vote. That was last weekend. They hold their elections on Sunday. So today they had the second round. And what happened, I thought, was very interesting. Because the far-right party, they call them the far-right party, but in order to keep the people who were against the open borders out, the socialists who came in third took their candidates off of the ballot and told their voters to go and vote for their arch enemy, the Republicans. So you've got the Republicans and the socialists uniting against the people who said, we don't want open borders. Doesn't it sound like America? Doesn't it sound like what's going on with Trump? You know, what's the guy from the Daily Caller that we had last week? Tucker Carlson, thank you. As Alex interviewed Tucker Carlson said, Donald Trump running as a third party, he's already running as a third party because he is talking about things that the Republican establishment doesn't want to talk about, doesn't want to go near. The fact that people are outraged that we have this uncontrolled immigration coming into our country. We have no control over the numbers of people coming in. We have no idea who these people are. There's no way to vet them. And we're now going to not only keep our borders open, but we're now going to specifically fly them in from war-torn areas, places where we have gone in and bombed the areas to radicalize people, and now we bring them into our country to create a terror attack. As I was looking, remember, we talked about this on the radio, how the Iranians, there was a drudge put up the scene where they were planning on, they had like a military drill where they were going to take back the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. But what they did was they created a model of the Dome of the Rock. They didn't even create the right mosque. And they're running around with their pitchforks, essentially. I mean, it looked like Monty Python's Holy Grail. I said, which one of them is holding the coconuts, you know, for the making the horse noises? It was absolutely ludicrous, this little exercise. I said, they can't project power. The only way that they're a danger to people is if we get them angry and upset and then bring them into our country. There's the picture of it. It looks like it's straight out of Monty Python. And then that picture right there, if you're looking at this on video, that is the Islamic version of what they want the world to look like. Everything reduced to smoking ashes except for the little mosque there. And they've got the wrong mosque that they put up there. Nevertheless, they're not a threat to us unless we attack them, make them angry, and then bring them into our country. They can't project power. They would very much like to do something in this country, and they will be able to do something if we bring them in massive numbers. So the socialists united with the conservative Republicans in France to keep out the people who were going to do something about the open borders. And the interesting thing about it is the National Front leader, Marine Le Pen, and it was also Marion Le Pen, a relative of hers, they were both expected to win. They both lost. Marine Le Pen was running for election in the area of Calais, where we have seen video after video of the problems there. Remember the videos, and we've shown this in reports on the nightly news. We've shown it on the radio. If you haven't seen this, you need to go to InfoWars. You can find the report. This trucker from Hungary, and as he's driving along the highway there, there's just these gangs of punks spoiling for a fight, standing in the road, daring the truckers to hit him, throwing rocks at the truckers, jumping on their trucks, trying to cut into them, bending their mirrors, and they've done far worse in many cases. She was running in Calais, and she got beat because they pulled the socialists off and made it a two-way race. That's the way these people roll. As they point out, the socialists told their voters to vote for the party of Sarkozy, who is widely despised by the socialists. But the one thing they cannot have is people coming together and stopping these open borders. There's the picture, if you're looking at that. And right there, he's kind of running fast. But there's other spots where he's stopped, and they're just standing in the road. I mean, just infuriating to watch it. And of course, you might want to turn off the subtitles, because he's got some real very creative phrases that he throws at these people, and they translate them there for you in English. But as all this is happening, we've got another terror attack coming. We've got an article up on Infowars.com today. Syrians arrested in a Swiss terror plot. They were transporting toxic gas for a Geneva attack. Swiss authorities said Saturday that two people of Syrian origin had been arrested on suspicion of transporting explosives and toxic gases. Swiss authorities had been on the lookout for five alleged Muslim terrorists thought to be planning an attack on Geneva this week. Two of the suspects were arrested on Friday. The men were transporting explosives and toxic gas for an alleged terrorist attack that was reported by a French newspaper, because caught them coming in from France. And as I look at these pictures, they've got pictures of the suspects there, and they've got black redacted bars over their faces. I don't understand why you would say, hey, we're looking for suspects that we think are going to be involved in a terrorist plot, and they look like this, but we can't show you their faces. So they black it out. I mean, to me, that is a metaphor for this whole phony war on terror. It's like, yeah, we got terrorists, but we want you to help us find them, but we can't. We're not going to let you see their faces, so we're going to redact that off of their faces. Now, they're pointing out that they only found traces of explosives in the car. They say more arrests are expected to be made in the coming days amid heightened security on Switzerland's border with France. Where else? With France. They say the two men spoke Arabic. They had valid Syrian passports. They had just arrived in Geneva. Now, on Friday, Kurt Nemo had an interesting article. He talked about the Syrian passports, and he talked about how Fox News has been talking a great deal about how Syria is a problem, that they've been fingering Syria and al-Assad for passport technology they say was left behind and now being used by the Islamic State. And Kurt goes into great detail about how, remember when we had 9/11? Remember how we had a whistleblower, Michael Springman? And he told us that he was forced to issue, in spite of all the protests that he gave to the General Accounting Office, to the State Department, to the embassy there, he was forced to issue these passports to people. 10 out of the 13 passports of people who supposedly attacked 9/11 coming out of Saudi Arabia, 10 of the 13 passports were issued out of the U.S. consulate in Jeddah. He was told this was being run by the CIA. If you want a job in the State Department in the future, you will change your mind about issuing passports to terrorists. That's the way they roll. Now, stay with us when we come right back. We're going to run a special report from John Bowne talking about the move to shut down your freedom with cars. We'll be right back.
During the Christmas holiday back in 1913, Congress enacted a communistic centralization of your money transferred to the control of an elite few. Communistic, you say? Well, the second plank of the Communist Manifesto states a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. The fifth plank states centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. Those planks have been long established in the United States. So it stands to reason that we are living in a somewhat communist country. Of course, all of the planks, if researched, apply to the current state of government in the U.S. in one way, shape, or form. For instance, Plank number 6, centralization of the means of communication and transportation in the hands of the state. Of course, the FCC is all over the control of communications, not to mention the NSA and your friendly neighborhood fusion center, and a lot of socialist-controlled examples such as the Postal Service and the government's control of Amtrak and Conrail. Represents the government's hand being placed in the free enterprise cookie jar for the world to see. But that's only the beginning of where government-controlled transportation is heading. The Huffington Post reports, there's growing confusion about how would-be flyers from Louisiana, Minnesota, New Hampshire, and New York will board planes when provisions of the Real ID Act go into effect, because their state ID and driver's license processes fail to meet federal standards. Passengers from those four states would likely need a passport, or in the case of non-citizens, immigration documents for air travel within the United States. The rules raise several concerns. There's the expense of acquiring a passport or other approved document, then there's the potential for disorder, as agitated passengers learn too late they can't get through security. The Department of Homeland Security's website reveals that starting on October 10th, visitors seeking access to military bases and almost all federal facilities using their state-issued driver's licenses or ID cards must present proper identification issued by Real ID compliant states. DHS continues, to be clear, this update does not affect identification shown at the airports in the United States. Until announced otherwise, the TSA will continue to accept valid driver's license and ID cards issued by all states. DHS plans to announce the schedule for any changes to air travel requirements by the end of the year, and will ensure that state governments and the traveling public are notified at least 120 days in advance of implementation. In the very near and real future, a real-life controlled matrix where transportation is no longer an individual right. CNN reports, Ford says the newest edition of its X-Max car has a new technology that scans traffic signs and adjusts the throttle to help drivers stay within legal speed limits and avoid fines. But the automated cars won't be obeying the speed limits. BBC reports, Google's self-driving cars are programmed to exceed speed limits by up to 10 miles per hour, according to the project's lead software engineer. Dmitry Dolgov told Reuters that when surrounding vehicles were breaking the speed limit, going more slowly could actually present a danger, and the Google car would accelerate to keep up. Of course, Google just wants you pesky humans to know that all 16 and counting reported self-driving car accidents weren't their fault. It was the fault of those meddling humans that reek of racial guilt and outdated individual freedom. The Daily Mail reports Google's self-driving car has been involved in several accidents since it was launched, all caused by humans, its testers claim. Driving a big, beautiful speed demon anywhere you want without Big Brother sitting in the passenger seat is simply one of those fading American rights that should awaken even the most jaded American mind. Freedom to move when, how, and where you want to in the United States is priceless until the socialistic, communistic, corporatocratic New World Order buys up that freedom and hands it over to their next installed puppet dictator with a big red bow on it. I suppose jolly old Nick better get his self-driving sleigh upgraded so the NSA can check their list to make sure if he's been naughty or nice. John Baum for InfoWars.com.
We now take you live
to the Central Texas Command Center
in the heart of the resistance. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. As you just heard in that last segment, the report, John Bounds special report, the death of great American car freedom. And of course, that is precisely what we're looking at in the near future as they usher in a complete control grid of our transportation. Part of that's going to be controlling our cars. And of course, they've told us that the way, one of the ways that we're going to save the planet is if we get rid of private car ownership and only Uber is allowed to have cars and we use Uber cars. I don't know how
Uber owning them makes them any more green than me owning a car. But of course, that's what they're telling us. So this is something that's been a dream for a very long time of the government. As John Baum pointed out, they're pushing real ID. We've seen the Republicans continue to push some kind of biometric identification as a quote unquote solution to the open borders that they create. All that's going to do is going to control you. They are not going to control the people who are coming in. That is going to be a means of control for American citizens. But they're going to push that real ID. They're going to push self-driving cars, as they point out. No, I've got a self-driving car right now. I drive myself. These are going to be robot cars that are controlled by corporations and controlled by the government, just like everything in the future is going to be controlled by corporations and controlled by the government. Why do you think they call them Uber? That's the ultimate plan there. And when we're talking about real ID, as we were just finishing up in the last segment, talking about, of course, these individuals arrested in a supposed terror plot in Switzerland who had Syrian passports. We had Fox News complain about the fact that Assad had somehow left behind technology to let ISIS create their own passports. Well, not so fast. Remember, as we pointed out, and if you look at this article on Infowars.com, it's Kurt Nemo's article, Syrian Passports. Recall the CIA's terrorist visas, the ones revolving around 9/11. 13 of the 15 supposed Saudi hijackers were issued visas to the United States, 10 of them at the U.S. consulate in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And, of course, he points out that the whistleblower, and they've got an embedded interview there where we talked to that whistleblower here at Infowars, Michael Springman. He talked about how he complained to many different authorities and said, you better issue these if you want a job. So we know that this is what everybody wants. We see the elections in France. We see how the socialists will join with the hated conservative Republicans to keep out a party that wants to get control of the borders. They were rising very quickly, looked like they were going to win. They had won the first round of elections in six of the 13 regions. And so the socialists said, well, we came in third. We're going to pull our candidates out and tell everybody to go vote for our hated conservative Republican foes. That's exactly what they did. Look at this report from Zero Hedge, a bombshell out of the Financial Times. The EU unveils a standing border force that will act even if a government objects. Understand that? Even if a government objects, they're going to create an EU border force. It's a border patrol that is going to keep the borders open over the objections of the sovereign governments. You have to understand, this is about global governance. This is about the death of the West, because they are the prime obstacle. They have to balkanize our societies. That is the goal. The left and the right are all in agreement with this. That is the move that they're doing. Now listen to what they said in the Financial Times report. Again, this is an article from Zero Hedge. Brussels is to propose the creation of a standing European border force that could take control of the bloc's external frontiers, even if a government objected. And he points out the even otherwise pro-EU Financial Times cautiously notes, this move would arguably represent the biggest transfer of sovereignty since the creation of the single currency euro. Because that's what this is really about. It's really about the transference of sovereignty. And they know that the obstacle to all of this is developed countries where people want to have some say-so in their government. They want to try to shut that down as quickly, as thoroughly as possible. And they said, he says, we agree because this is precisely what we said would happen. He said, the European Commission will unveil plans next week to replace the Frontex border agency with a permanent border force and a Coast Guard deployed with the final say of the Commission, according to EU officials and documents seen by the Financial Times. The blueprint represents a last-ditch effort to save the Schengen passport-free travel zone by introducing the kind of common border policing repeatedly demanded by Paris and Berlin, because it is the French and the German governments who are taking the lead and shoving this down everybody's throats. They point out Britain and Ireland have opt-outs from EU migration policy and would not be obliged to take part in the scheme. The Financial Times also adds, European leaders have discussed a common border force for more than 15 years, but have always struggled to overcome deep-seated objections to yielding national powers to monitor or enforce borders, one of the core functions of a sovereign state. And when I look at this, and when I look at the fact that they're talking about now having a European Union control of the borders around the outside of Europe, and then breaking down all controls on the inside, saying we don't really care what the nations inside Europe say. I'm reminded of the North American Union. I'm reminded of the Council on Foreign Relations Committee that Ted Cruz's wife, Heidi Cruz, sat on, where they talked about this very thing, about how they needed to have a border that went around the United States, Canada, and Mexico, that would presumably be run by some people in Homeland Security or whatever. But that's what the bankers here want, because that's what they're doing. They're creating unified blocks that they are then going to unify based on climate change treaties, based on trade treaties like the Trans-Pacific, the Transatlantic Partnership. That'll probably come through right at Christmas time. That's been setting out there, this massive document that's four times the combined works of Shakespeare. Nobody is really talking about it. Haven't had time myself to read the combined works of Shakespeare four times with all the other stuff that I'm doing. And it is a very dense legal document. So it's going to come up for a vote. We don't really know when it's going to come up, but I would bet that it's going to come up through the holiday season. Now, as we see this move for open borders, and we understand what's really behind it, it's not about being xenophobic. It's not about hating people from different areas. It's about having some control over your country, or whether you're going to give it all up to some people who are trying to push global governance. And now they're taking the terror that they're unleashing amongst us, and the Democrats are trying to shift that to a gun debate. And we have this up on Infowars.com. It's one of the top stories. Dems shift terror debate to guns. They point out leaders in the party, the Democratic Party, think they have a winning message in pushing legislation that would ban gun sales to people who are on the federal terror watch list and have made a bill the focal point of their response to the shooting. Now, the problem with that is that we just had another terror scare where it didn't even involve guns, right? The one that happened yesterday, the border of Switzerland and France, that was explosives that they found, chemical attacks. See, if you let the people in, the problem is not being able to tell who's coming into your country and importing massive numbers of people from a war-torn jihadi area. That's a problem. They can get any kind of weapons that they want, but you make it about the weapons because that suits your agenda. You've already got a solution that you want to push. So what you do is you go out there and you create a problem. Thank you, Democrats. You bring the people in, and then when you've got some of them shoot up an area, whether that happened completely on their own or whether that was staged, because we do have some concerns. The initial reports said that there were three white men, very large white men, and then it turned out to be one guy and his wife, who's very small, and we're not told anymore about the three tall white men that just kind of disappeared, vanished out of the narrative. So there's some concern about what exactly is going on there. But at the very least, this is the kind of false flag that FDR ran with Pearl Harbor, where Naval Intelligence and FDR and General Marshall, they were well aware of the Japanese intentions and of their designs against Pearl Harbor. They wanted the Japanese to attack first. They shut down the intelligence that was collected. And we've had whistleblowers around 9/11. We've had Thomas Drake tell us that as the NSA was finding out information about getting traffic about terrorists wanting to move on 9/11, that was also shut aside. So you always have that kind of FDR, Pearl Harbor type of false flag. But then they shift it to guns. Shift it to guns, because that's really the solution that they wanted. And when we come back, I want to play for you again, because it was just so good what Kurt Russell had to say to this guy who was interviewing him for this Quentin Tarantino film. It was so good what he had to say to this guy who was pushing that we had to take guns from people who were on this this Star Chamber watch list that they've created.
Waging war on corruption, it's Alex Jones.
It's the time of the season.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Radio Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to play for you a clip that played on the fourth hour of the radio show on Friday, an interview that Kurt Russell had with It was with Jeffrey Wells of Hollywood Elsewhere. And Jeffrey Wells was talking to him about the upcoming movie, Hateful Eight. It's a Quentin Tarantino film. It's set in the Old West, post-Civil War, but he kept haranguing him about pushing the gun culture in films. And so they did a lot of talk about, you know, what's the difference between reality and something that is an art? And they kept going back and forth. But he kept bringing it back. No, but we need to have gun control. We need to take guns from people. We need to take guns from people because of they're on the terrorist watch list or whatever. Kurt Russell had some great responses to this. So I want to play that for you. Before we do, real quickly, I want to let you know about our specials at InfoWarsStore.com. We've got quite a few specials going on right now, just before Christmas. A lot of these are nutraceuticals. We've got 15% off Winter Sun Vitamin D3, 17% off of Deep Cleanse. We've got some packs there. We've got a cleanse pack with Deep Cleanse, Living Defense, Oxy Powder, 28% off. We've got an Essentials Pack with Survival Shield X2, Super Male or Super Female Vitality, and Silver Bullet. That's 33% off. We even got a special on coffee. If you buy two bags of InfoWars coffee, you get an InfoWars mug for free. And that's our 100% organic, non-GMO, grown without pesticides, gourmet quality, Wake Up America coffee. Great stuff. And there's a lot of things at the InfoWars store that are super for Christmas gifts, too, that are not just supplements. That's also free shipping on everything there this next week. Things like the InfoWars Premium Power Pack. It's a battery device there that you can charge all your electronic devices, even enough juice to jumpstart your car, and includes jumper cables to be able to do that, as well as a new thing that we've got, a solar base station power supply. This is 1,500 watts of continuous power. It's a battery system, including an inverter to power AC devices, all in one. So it's something you can take and use portably as a an emergency power backup, or something that you can hook into your house, depending on how you use it. If you use it for your house in a permanent installation, you might be able to get the 30% tax credit. That's not a deduction, it's a credit. So it's something to take a look at. It's got the latest battery technology, lithium ion phosphate battery, lasts up to 8 times longer than a typical unit. All this stuff is available at InfoWarsStore.com. Take a look at the specials and the new products that we've got there. Let's go back. As we're talking in the last segment, we're talking about how the Democrats are shifting the terror debate to guns. And, of course, saying that if somebody is on a super secret Star Chamber watch list, then they should be able to punish them for that. The saddest thing about this is that the GOP is not protesting this unconditional blacklisting procedure. We had Dianne Feinstein offered an amendment to the Obamacare repeal bill last week that would allow the attorney general to block a gun sale to a terrorist suspect that failed 45 to 54. But the GOP is playing defense on this. They're not going on the offense. They're not saying, we're going to defend the Constitution. You're not going to put people on a list when they don't even know they're on a list. You're not going to put them on a list when they don't have a chance to confront the charges, to know who their accusers are, to know that they're even being accused of something, and then use that list to take things from them. That is incredibly dangerous. But of course, we've seen this administration come up with a no-fly list. They've come up with an assassination list for their drones, and I'm sure they've got a list for their indefinite detention without trial that they passed with the NDAA on New Year's Eve 2011 that Obama signed. All they can do is, we've got Senator Cornyn from Texas suggested amending the legislation so the government could delay a terror suspect from buying a gun for up to 72 hours while obtaining a court order to approve blocking the sale. But the Democrats said, no, that's not good enough. You understand how weak that is? You've had a situation that they're complaining about where for 11 years, you had about 2,200 people who went through the process, the vetting process, the background checks, who were on this super secret no-fly list. About 2,200 people did it. 91% of them were approved. I would say that maybe they don't belong on that list. All they can do is say, well, you know, we've got this list and the list isn't perfect. We shouldn't have a list like that. If you're going to use this to block people's travel, if you're going to use it to block their ability to exercise their rights and do other penalties against them, you need to call it what it is. Call it what it is. Call it a criminal prosecution in absentia. That's what it's come to in America. And of course, that's, however, the big thing that the Democrats are pushing back on. So we've got this interview that was going on with Kurt Russell. Again, it was Jeffrey Wells of Hollywood Elsewhere. He's initially talking about the upcoming movie, but he has a problem with gun violence. He has a problem with the gun culture, and he keeps hitting Kurt Russell. Let's play this. We've got it in two different parts because there's two parts where Kurt Russell directly addresses gun control. Here's the first part.
There's this thing that sudden violence as a normal day-to-day aspect coming from the gun culture, coming from everything else. It's a different vibe, you know?
I don't understand the concepts of conversation of the gun culture. We've lived with guns since, what, the 7th century or something? Well, I don't know.
We all know that right now guns is a trope. It's a totem. It's a metaphor that disenfranchised white guys need. It makes them feel good because they're being...
You can say what you want. I don't agree with that. So it's not my thing.
But it's statistically...
If you think that gun control or something like that is going to change a terrorist point of view, I think you're like out of your mind. I think anybody is. I think it's absolutely insane. The problem we're having right now is that we don't have the concepts of how to turn it around and say, you know, you may think you've got me worried about what you're going to do. Dude, you're about to find out what I'm going to do. And that's going to worry you a lot more. And that's what we need. That will change the concept of gun culture, as you call it, to something of reality, which is, if I'm a hockey team and I got a guy bearing down on me as a goaltender, I'm not concerned about what he's going to do. I'm going to make him concerned about what I'm going to do.
Isn't that beautiful? I love the way Kurt Russell put it. And you can hear Snake Plissken in that. He goes, you got somebody coming after you. He's like, I'm going to make them worry about what I'm going to do, because we're going to have people out there, armed citizens, who can protect themselves, who have concealed carry. That was the intention of the Constitution. That's what a militia is really about. It's about an armed citizenry being able to protect itself better than a professional standing army or a professional standing army of police even. Let's hear the rest of that because we're getting close on time.
Obama's point was that the guys who are on the no-fly list because of terrorist connections can get a gun pretty easily.
They can also make a bomb pretty easily.
Yeah.
So what? They can also get knives and stab you. What are you going to do about that? They can get cars and run you over with them. What are you going to do about that?
They didn't kill the people in San Bernardino.
Oh, but they've killed others that way. Haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah. So what are you going to do? Outlaw everything? That isn't the answer.
Just... put some controls.
Put some controls. What? So the people who want to defend themselves can't?
No, not so you can't. Just so the idiots can't get a hold of them.
You really believe they're not going to? Are you serious about that? Are you seriously? What good will that? Oh my God! You and I just disagree.
Okay.
You and I just disagree. I understand that you think that you can control the behavior of people.
He got it exactly right. And you know that he was talking about, they've got other ways that they can kill people besides guns. And what did we see? We saw them putting up the way to do that with bombs. We'll be right back.
We are on the march. The Empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take your phone calls in this last half hour. The number to call if you want to call in is 877-789-2539. It's a different number on Sundays. Again, that number is 877-789-ALEX. If you want to call in, and we'll leave the phone lines open for your calls. And as we were just playing in that last segment, we had Kurt Russell. We'd played that, played that in the fourth hour, that interview that he had talking about gun control, saying, hey, you want to take guns from people who are on a no-fly list. Of course, he didn't question how they got on the no-fly list or whether they were really a threat. And we've seen over and over again that people are put on the no-fly list that are not a threat. We've had Senator Kennedy, we've been told, was put on the no-fly list. But we've had many instances where there are toddlers who are put on the no-fly list. Wade Hicks was somebody that I talked to. He was one of the first interviews I did when I came here to InfoWars. Was a guy who was traveling on a military plane to go see his wife, who was on the station of the military in Japan. He had a stop-off in Hawaii. He had been vetted in many different ways by the FBI for having guns. He carried guns, had carry a number of different concealed carry permits and other things that he had. He had been vetted by the TSA as an airport worker. He had been vetted by the military to go on that plane. When he got into Hawaii, as he was about to make the next leg of the trip, people got on the plane, pulled him off the plane, said, you're on a no-fly list. Now he's stuck in Hawaii. And there was absolutely no reason for it. He was never told why he was put on it. He could never get any answer. Even after he learned he was on the no-fly list, they wouldn't tell him why he was on the no-fly list. No procedure for getting off of this because, you know, this is a secret list. It's a star chamber. Our forefathers who created the Constitution knew all about this. They had seen this happen many times through Europe. They'd seen it happen in England, the star chamber. That's why they put in the Fifth and Sixth Amendment. We talked about that a great deal on Thursday. I'm not going to go back into that again, but that's why we need to understand the historical background of why we have the things that we have in the Constitution. We need to understand that liberty and due process are paramount. If you've got candidates who don't support that, if you've got candidates who are going to marginalize that to say they're going to make you safer, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. To the extent that you give up your freedom, you become a slave to that extent. Slaves are never secure. Just understand that. But he made an excellent point, Kurt Russell did, when he said, hey, you know, you want to take guns from law-abiding people? The way to do this is to make sure that if somebody is trying to worry you, trying to terrorize you about what he's going to do, he says, dude, you're about to find out what I'm going to do, and that's going to worry you a lot more. If you've got people who have concealed carry, you got law-abiding citizens who are armed, that's going to worry these terrorists. That's something for them to worry about. That's something that they don't have in any other part of the world. And that is truly our best defense. And as he points out, what are you going to do? You're going to take away everything from them? After this interview was run, of course, just yesterday we had some terrorists arrested in Switzerland who were preparing a car bomb with explosives and chemicals. So they can use anything if they want to terrorize people. But we're told that if we oppose open borders, that we are xenophobic. And of course, as Donald Trump has opposed that, that's been the core of his support because none of the other candidates will talk about that. We've seen conservative Republicans here join with socialists here, just as they did today in France, to shut down anyone who's concerned about open borders. And so they pushed back when he said that there were places in the UK where you can't go. They said, no, that's not true. That's not true. We're going to bar Donald Trump from the UK. Well, here, the New American has a report from the Daily Mail. They say a Lancaster police officer told Mail Online there are, quote, Muslim areas of Preston that if we wish to patrol, we have to contact local Muslim community leaders to get their permission. Do you want to live like that? Do you want to have a country that's fractionated like that? They point out, they say, I'm not allowed, this is another police officer from Yorkshire says, I'm not allowed to travel in half blues to work anymore in my own car as we're all at risk of attack. Yet, as soon as someone points out the obvious, they're called divisive. They're called xenophobic. They're called racist, right? One female officer at the Met said that if a police officer was attacked, it would be written off. She said, even if one of us did get killed or dragged off in a van, it would just be reported as a one-off incident and no reason to change the British style of policing. They point out in the New American, this reflects a statement made by the UK-based Muslim refugee Dr. Mudar Zahran, who readily admitted in an October interview, we do have a genuine problem with Muslims in Europe. In most cases, they don't seem to fully integrate into the country. So that's the problem. They self-ghettoize themselves because they don't want to assimilate into our culture. They've got their own culture. They've got their own religion, and it has a political dimension to it as well. You have to understand, their religion is inextricably mixed in with a desire of political hegemony. That is part of Islam. So when they come into Western countries, they self-ghettoize themselves. And as a result, they don't do well. It just builds resentment. It means that even if the first generation doesn't hate the host country, the second generation, there will be many who do. So it's a prescription for disaster. Now, as we're talking about Donald Trump, and I want to get into a little bit of politics here, I guess we could call it poll-a-tics because that's what it's all about. Who's doing what in the polls? And as we've seen, Donald Trump, the latest poll shows that Cruz is 10 points ahead of him in the Des Moines Register. That is the last poll that Des Moines Register will do. They're pretty well noted for being very accurate. They do a lot of groundwork, a lot of legwork goes into their poll. I look at it, though, and if this is an honest election, that's always got to be a big caveat anytime we talk about politics in America, whether or not it's going to be an honest election. And we've seen a lot of manipulation in the primaries, in the caucuses when Ron Paul ran 4 years ago. But let's just assume that it's an honest election. I think that Donald Trump is putting together a coalition of people who aren't strictly Republicans. And it really kind of depends in this poll when they look at Republicans and ask them who they would vote for. They're not talking to blue-collar Democrats who I think are possibly going to show up in large numbers to vote for him. So we'll just have to see what happens with this. But, of course, the Washington Post is trying to attack Donald Trump by attacking him using InfoWars. You know, he's bad because he did an interview with InfoWars. They talk about all the usual stuff, about how we're just a conspiracy site. That's all InfoWars is, according to the Washington Post. They even use the old canard about the moon landings. And then they use that straw man that they build to attack Donald Trump. Here's the deal, okay? They don't attack Donald Trump for going on MSNBC and saying, well, you know, MSNBC said this, so Donald Trump must agree with that because he did an interview with him. Or the same thing with CNN. They don't attack CNN for their, they don't attack him for doing interviews with CNN saying that, you know, CNN had this around-the-clock Flight 370 coverage. They had a poll where one of only four choices was that they'd been abducted by aliens or had passed through some kind of a time portal. You know, that was CNN. That's CNN, you know. The same people, the same CNN that faked the bombing in Kuwait that were under attack and they were doing it on a green screen in their studio. The same CNN that more recently, when you had the Sandy Hook stuff, they had Anderson Cooper on a green screen pretending that he's talking to somebody there at Sandy Hook and his nose is disappearing. You know, that's CNN. The same ones who are going to be hosting the debate on Tuesday night. They don't criticize him for going on there. So, you know, the real problem that they have is that Donald Trump doesn't keep it inside the beltway. That's the problem they have. You know, you are not supposed to be able to talk to anybody unless you're part of the anointed mainstream press. But that's one of the reasons why he's so popular, because he is going outside that very controlled area. And they go on to talk about how they characterize Alex Jones as a ranting radio host and the leading Republican candidate. Donald Trump shared a microphone and some common ground. They talk about how we are right-wing, libertarian, and flat-out paranoid. Well, you know what? Maybe we were paranoid. You know, they say we're paranoid all the time about saying that the government was watching us, listening to our conversations. We know that's happening now, don't we? No, there's not even a question of that happening. So, yeah, we're not conspiracy theorists. We've been reporting what they've been doing for a long time, and they don't like the fact that we are in the ascension. They don't like the fact that Donald Trump has gone outside their little sacred halls. We'll be right back with your phone call. Stay with us.
Take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're going to go to your calls in just a moment. Before we do, I just want to remind you that we have free shipping at the InfoWars at InfoWarsStore.com. We have a lot of specials as well. We've got 15% off Winter Sun Vitamin D3. 17% off Deep Cleanse. It's our first sell ever on Deep Cleanse. And we've got some packs there. We've got 33% off an Essentials pack of Survival Shield X2. That's our nascent iodine, as well as Silver Bullet and Super Male or Female Vitality. There's also a Cleanse pack that is Deep Cleanse, Living Defense, and Oxy Powder. That pack is 28% off. So all those specials that we have, as well as free shipping. Check it out at InfoWarsStore.com. That's InfoWarsStore.com. Let's go to your calls now. Let's go to Mark in California. Mark? Let's see. Okay, I think we've lost Mark. Let's go to Philip in Washington. Philip.
Hello.
Hello, Philip. Go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to read a quotation I copied down about 10 years ago. And then if you've got time or interest, I can read what I wrote then, which I found interesting. Here it is. The following words are from the April 20th, 1936 report of William C. Bullitt, FDR's first ambassador to the Soviet Union. Writing of the communist faith in the supposedly perfect world to come after their triumph, he opined, quote, "The ultimate fate of such a faith is clear. Even Islam was wise enough to proclaim God is God and to place the 17 dark Aries in heaven. But communism has been sufficiently indiscreet to proclaim that there is no God and to promise heaven on earth. Nevertheless, the comparison with Islam is often illuminating. In particular, the primitive fanaticism of the communists recalls again and again the fanaticism in the Red Square to be worshipped. Lenin is the second great prophet, Stalin is the third. Just as fanatical Mohammedans were able to commit the most atrocious crimes with a happy sense of virtue in order to promote the interests of their faith, so today, the believing communist is superior to all restraints of justice, truth, honor, kindness, or human decency."
Tell me what you think about that. That's good. We got the gist of it. So, you know, tell me what you think about it, and then I'll tell you my opinion about the two. Go ahead.
He goes in further. I'll skip the early part and say, "Moreover, like early Islam, communism is a faith which is larger than any state unit, which it may conquer or create. The ultimate repository of authority and power is the community of the faithful of all nations, whose representative is the ruling prophet, the communist caliph."
I agree. I think that the thing that is different about Islam, that has been there from the very beginning, is that it is a combination. It's not simply a religion. It is a combination of religion and a political movement. Fundamental to Islam is the idea that there is going to be a global governance, a caliphate, is what they call it. And so from that standpoint, I agree that both the communists want to establish a global governance and the Muslims want to establish a global governance. They did that at the very beginning of Islam. They were moving very quickly through Europe, through Northern Africa. It looked like they were going to take over the world, but then there was reversal. They were contained for many centuries, and that has been a refutation of their faith, the fact that they do not have global dominance. So I think that's very much a part of it. I think when people look at it and say that this is simply an issue of religious freedom, they really don't understand the fundamental issue with Islam, that it is a combination of religion and politics. And when they talk about Christianity and say that we've had situations when Christianity was violent and there were one sect going after another sect. Yes, that did happen. And that happened at the times when Christianity was allied with civil government. That was a key part of it, the alliance there of the religion with the government. And that's what's so dangerous about Islam today. That's what we carefully do not want to have in Western societies. That's why there is a fundamental disconnect, I believe, between Islam and what we want to see in a Western society. We want a tolerant, open society, but they want to establish a governmental organization. It's inextricably linked, the fact that they are going to have worldwide dominance. So you want to make a comment on that?
Also, that there is a communist faith independent of government at that time called dialectical materialism, which was founded by Lenin.
Yes.
And this did have a religious character. You've got to remember the second.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There was the communists strove to eradicate all manifestations of religion and establish their own secular religion. And we need to understand that atheists have their gods, and those gods are fiercely worshipped. And communism is one of the best examples of that. Thank you. I want to move on and let some of the other callers get in. Let's go to John in Missouri. John, go ahead.
Hey, David. How are you doing today?
Doing fine. Go ahead.
Very good. I'm curious about your views on Trump. I just want to say first, I follow you on Twitter, and I've seen some things that you've put out about Trump, and people were accusing you of saying things that you didn't say, and I just wanted to get it from your mouth, the actual source. How do you feel about Donald Trump?
Well, I think that Donald Trump has gained popularity because, as I've been talking about in this program, he's identified a core core problem in this country that other people don't want to talk about. Just as we've seen in France, we've seen conservative Republicans in France join with the socialists in France to shut down a movement that wants to try to get control of their borders because it is out of control. They have no idea who's coming in. They're not vetting the people. They have no control over the quantity of people that are coming in. Donald Trump has talked about that. And that has been, from the very beginning, one of the key things about Donald Trump. And I think that's a very important discussion for us to have. He's the only one who is talking about that. It's a very populist approach that he's taking. But let me say this. I don't support Donald Trump. Because when you have populism, unless it is mixed with a strong libertarianism, a strong respect for individual liberty, that can very quickly devolve into an authoritarian fascism. It's a very dangerous thing to play with, pure populism, not controlled by liberty. In the Declaration of Independence, they talked about how governments are created to protect our individual rights. And if the government does not protect our individual rights, if it comes after those rights, we have the right and the duty to alter or abolish that government. So when I look at a candidate, if I get a candidate who is largely silent on individual liberty, I'm kind of like, I'm not very comfortable with that. Not very comfortable with the GOP not talking about the Star Chamber no-fly lists. When we got a candidate who comes out and makes several pronouncements saying that they're going to shut down free speech or they're going to take, they're open to taking guns from people who are on the no-fly list as Donald Trump has. When you say that you're open to taking my liberties, at that point, I declare my independence from you, just like the Declaration of Independence. I am not going to support anybody who thinks that, who's going to make me promises that I'm going to be safer or I'm going to be wealthier, I'm going to be better off if they take my freedom. That person doesn't understand the bigger issues involved. And I think that is the fundamental issue. That is the biggest issue. I am a libertarian first and last. That is the key thing. If you take my liberty, if, as Patrick Henry said, guard the precious jewel of liberty. Regard with suspicion anyone who approaches it. So if you're going to brag about how authoritarian you're going to be, if you're going to brag about how you're going to take my civil liberties, if you're going to say that you're going to do this or do that to provide me safety, you lose my support. You want to respond? Go ahead.
Do you think, I mean, because I know Alex supports him, and I'm sure he sees there are downsides to that too, but I do have to agree with his statement. I think it's better than a Hillary or a lot of other options that we have. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, you know, I just, you know, I can't, as a, when I talk on the radio or even when I cast my ballot at the voting booth, I will not tell somebody that I'm going to support someone who has advocated taking my freedom. I just won't do that. I will do a protest vote. I will speak against that. That's just my own personal conviction. I appreciate the fact that Alex has his own convictions and he doesn't try to tell us what to say or do. I think that's a strength of InfoWars, that we all have our own opinions that we can follow. He doesn't demand that I support, you know, we all understand that. Look, InfoWars has always been a mixture of libertarianism and populism, but it has always been predominantly libertarianism. And individual liberty is what I'm concerned about, and I will not support anybody who comes after individual liberty. It's just that simple. Well, we're out of time. That's it for today's broadcast. Join us tomorrow. Alex will be back at 11 Central, 12 Eastern for the Alex Jones Radio Show. Thank you for joining us.